But what we were talking about on Sunday, what I was playing, was a tape of a demonstration that happened on Saturday. On Saturday in Monterey, the California Association of Broadcasters opened its conference, and they are the group, as some of you may know, that with the National Association of Broadcasters is the key muscle, the key brain behind the attack on free radio. And here's some more from that protest demonstration. We marched, we spoke, got a lot of good media. You can hear it here in your own home.
We're on Del Monte Avenue now, and it's about 20 to 2. I see a Santa Cruz Free Radio showing up with a long banner, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Are you with Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I've been broadcasting with Free Radio Santa Cruz for about a year and a half.
And what do you hope to accomplish here today?
Well, we just want to let the CAB know that we're out here and we don't agree with the way that they've discriminate against poor people by taking the public airwaves, and just let them know that there's a contingent out there that's going to fight for our freedom of speech and our freedom of expression on the airwaves, which should be the public's anyway.
So you have a petition in your hand. Is this for people to sign?
Yes, we're trying to get as much support as possible so that if and when we do get busted, we have at least 2,000 names of people that support their freedom of expression and their right to be able to get on the airwaves anytime they want. Through our voicemail or through calling in the station or through being a guest on a show or whatever.
Well, what kind of shows does Free Radio Santa Cruz do?
Free Radio has everything from 15-year-old kids doing shows to 50-year-old guys doing shows, and everything from political activism and talking about what's going on locally with the city council, as well as just hip-hop shows, lots of independent music that gets sent to us that doesn't normally get airplay on the commercial radio stations and the ones that are owned by the about 5 or 10 big corporations. We try to get stuff out there that you wouldn't otherwise
get. Why don't you just get a license? Wouldn't that be easier?
With license comes regulation, and it costs so much money that we would never be able to afford to have a license.
So now we're at the Monterey Conference Center, where the DoubleTree Hotel apparently is sponsoring this free radio. Not free radio, I'm sorry, the California Association of Broadcasters Conference. Now a large conference center, and not necessarily, no, because I mean they're just sort of other, they got paid so people are coming here. That's just a hotel with a conference.
You're talking to Hibbert Olson from Monterey.
And Hibbert, are you a Free Radio Monterey broadcaster?
I am not a broadcaster.
A listener?
I'm more interested in having more stations available. I did not know the frequency of the local station until this today.
Really?
And so today's the first day I listened, because they had it in the newspaper and told me what frequency.
Wow.
But I would like to have a place to see controversial issues that are aired.
Right.
I feel that the public service announcements are not sufficient. There's not a sufficient time, and they're so heavily strained that I don't see, I've never seen anyone talking about public service announcements to me as if it was a issue of the day.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that if we get more broadcasters out there, it will put pressure on the big guys, because when the micro radio broadcasts about the important issues, the other people can't ignore them.
Thank you very much. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I think I've done it.
This area in Marina,
and they had their equipment stolen.
Stolen by a person.
Nobody knows who stole it.
You know what? I've actually heard rumors of the FCC hiring ham radio operators as vigilantes to mess with mainly Latino and Black stations and just go and harass them and, you know, do stuff like that. That could be a possibility. Ham radio operators, like, operating as vigilantes for the FCC.
What's your name?
Bill.
Bill, are you with Monterey Free Radio?
With Monterey.
And how long has Monterey Free Radio been around the air?
I'm here as a supporter because I feel that there's a free speech
issue
concern that we have, and I think that as you look at what's going on around you, we want to have access to as much speech as possible. And I think that having low power radio stations provides for an opportunity for free speech. No matter what you're doing or where you're going, you should have the information. And this is one way to get it. because we don't get all the information, and I think that if free speech is a possibility, it can be to low power stations. Any comments?
I'm Peggy from Monterey, and my husband and I didn't even know that Free Monterey Radio existed until it hit the newspaper today. We've heard about free radio in Berkeley and the problems they've been having, and we're both extremely concerned about corporate takeover of the media. We think it's disgusting and horrible, and that people all over are getting one point of view, and that concerns me terribly. And the only place I have heard a humanitarian point of view is from KPFA in Berkeley. I think listener-sponsored radio is terribly, terribly important, and free radio to give people, small people, non-corporations, a voice that we need so desperately to get the health and governmental changes that are needed desperately in this country that's being run more and more by corporations with no concern for people.
Have you listened to, you hadn't known the Free Radio Monterey was operating until this morning?
That is correct.
So you're going to be listening to see if this is some sort of wild and crazy thing or a true alternative, eh?
Absolutely. Well, the person that's running it worked on the single payer initiative, the health initiative that we tried to get passed in 94, so I know he's a good person.
A pitch for... Well, is there anyone that you suggest I speak to get more details on Free Radio Monterey?
Yes, James Mason is the low power behind it, or the high power behind the low power, and he's the fellow with the red curly hair.
I will track him down and seek him out.
James Mason, you can't forget that name.
Thank you. Okay, they're running the convention center. It's around 2 in the afternoon.
There is somebody coming up. And
it's
not on the schedule.
Right.
Let me see the phone.
California Broadcast Association is wearing some kind of a dinner here. There's a large sign. And
I'm going to call up the phone.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Sure. It's not on the board. Did you get a refund? Huh?
And what you're hearing here is some of us going inside the hotel and the convention center trying to investigate what's going on. The conference had actually not really started, but the people were beginning to register.
Well, that feels like it's a Monday, yeah. So how long is the conference show for?
We just have one day here.
Just one day here.
The basic double tree.
Right.
They have a general session here. Everything else is a double tree starting Monday.
Okay.
So
it
doesn't start today.
And the
for
people running the conference center were a little nervous that we were running around. Of course, the police demanded a permit from folks walking up and down in front of the conference center. And we'll hear more about that as we continue.
I'm JJ Shen. I'm here to work with the kids. I got a whole bunch of things going on. I need this, please.
Thanks.
Thank you. Can I talk to you a little more?
Sure.
Let me know what's going on.
Thank you.
This is my detail here. I was not aware of what's going on, so I need to know what's going on.
It's a little hard to hear what you hear the officer asking is, does he have a permit? And apparently he does, but he didn't have a copy with him, so he sent someone to his house to get a copy of the permit. In fact, you shouldn't need a permit to hold a non-obstructive, small, peaceful demonstration on public property, but he was concerned that he knew the ways of the Monterey Police and wanted to use that approach.
What I need you to do for me is either you get it or someone else get it for you. That way you can present it to any other officer that comes down here.
Yeah,
yeah, you got. Hey, how long have you been down here?
No.
And I haven't heard anything about it. So I mean, obviously you're doing a very great job of being peaceful. I appreciate that. The main important things that he told you about is that it's very important that we don't block passage, clear passage right now. Like right now, instead of walking, this little lady right here is standing here, or you're standing right here with it, and they can't walk past you. That's breaking the law. So we want to keep them cruising through here, and they're screaming and yelling. And anything
of course,
like that.
Nobody was blocking anything, and the police officer was being a police officer.
But just if you start doing this, no, I need you to take this. They can't do that, okay? We gotta be able to flow, get back, flow, and keep things working, okay? And, I mean, you know, what the heck? I mean, got all these people here talking, I'm enjoying myself, spinning the speech, I don't have any problems.
You're on the radio, as well.
I'm on the radio, hey, all right, Officer Shen.
Hey, no shouting, Officer Shen.
No shouting, can't shout. No shouting, about this loud is okay.
Yeah. But we're not gonna shout anyway, because that's what the problem is, you can shout as loud as you want.
Yeah, but we don't wanna do that, so, anyway. How long are you going to be out here?
5 hours.
Okay, and then that's pretty much what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Sounds good to me. I've got one of these.
Be sure you read it.
Get that piece of paper.
I'll have somebody bring it over.
Would you do that for me? And that way, the other officers that come down here, they have that. And we should be good. And I appreciate you doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting the point across excellent without having to scream and shout and get people riled up.
Make sure you turn into free radio, Monterey.
Where is it at? 96.3.
89.3.
89.3. This is Santa Cruz.
And we're locally here? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we're out of local.
I'm a
local
pirate, yes.
Sounds good to me.
That's pretty piratical to me.
Thank you very much. What's your name again?
James Mason.
Ken Shen. Nice to meet you. All right, you guys have a good day today then.
You're welcome.
And that was a Saturday conversation with a police officer at the Free Radio Monterey, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Radio Berkeley, San Francisco Liberation Radio protest against the real powers behind the FCC's attack on micropower. We're going to hear more about that on Sunday. I will conclude that interview then. But in the studio with us, we have at last able to break free from child care. We have Lisa Johnson. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. And we ran into each other, I guess, most recently at the Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday night.
Yep, I sure did.
And you're a person who's doing, well, who's involved in a lot of areas of public work. But I know you just have been looking at these two articles in the Metro around Phil Baer and the Beach Flats, and you spoke on the issue before City Council. You want to start with that issue? I know you have a number of issues, but how does that for a place to begin?
Sure. I actually didn't speak before City Council on this, but I'm outraged by the letters that I have read in the Metro. I'm first of all happy that the Metro is really showing itself strongly as a voice for the people to air and put out their political situations. And however, the letters about Phil Baer have become personal attacks, and especially the issue of him being racist. To call Phil Baer racist is like saying, you know, Gandhi toted a gun. It's just that absurd.
Perhaps Scott Kennedy's new view of Gandhi is sort of a gunslinger. After all, we have guns, cops with guns at the resource center, and sort of as has been dubbed a snitch central person working with Beach Flats cops against gangs as part of what has been traditionally a peaceful, nonviolent alternative to the police violence or the use of violence or threat of violence to supposedly engage in social control or social betterment. What's really struck me, though, about the comments by Kennedy and Hernandez is not that Baer is getting trashed in the media. I mean, I get trashed in the media, too. But that the people who are trashing him are city council members who have contacted the DA, and this apparently was a year later. Is that correct? That's what Mr. Martinez says.
Yeah, from what I understand, and that's based upon everybody else's way of figuring this thing out, reading it in the Metro, Mr. Martinez stated that this conversation happened a year ago. And he's exactly right, stating if it in fact was a year ago, and Kennedy feels so obligated to save the public from this monster, Phil Baer, why didn't he do it a year ago? I mean, it just doesn't make sense, and it's obviously an opportunistic time period in the political climate that we're in right now with Santa Cruz. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned, and I applaud Mr. Martinez for his integrity, and the fact that he did not stab Phil Baer in the back. He had a lot riding on this, and I if I'm wrong, I apologize, and please feel free to correct me anytime you may see me on the street or put it in the media, what have you, but from what I understand, he had a deal that fell through with the city of Santa Cruz.
Mr. Martinez, the man who allegedly complained that Phil Baer, this is what, of course, Councilmembers Hernandez and Kennedy claimed, that that Martinez had called him up and complained that Baer had spoken out at a landlord's meeting to discriminate against Latinos and to find ways not to rent to them.
I think it was under a casual lunch engagement that Martinez was having with Kennedy. I could be wrong with this, but under this casual engagement and conversation, Martinez mentioned this, that happened, you know, a while back.
But what he did mention, according to this letter, is that this meeting was about drug dealers,
what
right? Not about discriminating against Latinos, right?
Right. Well, what it was I believe, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, unfortunately I can right now, but there were perhaps four landlords who met, having lunch, having dinner, talking about the issues of the Beach Blast community, and basically looking out for themselves, said, you know, it would be good to get a list of drug dealers in our community so that we don't rent to them. And immediately, from what I understand, Phil was like, well, there's no need for this list, you know. Point. I mean, that was pretty much it. It was like a one sentence, a quick statement thing. And the reason why there's no need is A, you live in the community, you know who is dealing drugs, and you know these people directly. And B, you know, creating a list is you know, a definite form of blacklisting people is not like the most positive thing to do. I mean, if you choose to rent to someone or not, you know. And basically, from that little tidbit, Kennedy and Hernandez? Kennedy and Hernandez twisted it to Phil Bear is not renting to Latinos, and he's a racist, and he's practicing unfair landlord practices to Latinos and discriminating, blah, blah, blah. And in fact, that wasn't the case. It never was the case. In fact, I almost rented from the Bears.
And you look like a person of a Mediterranean coloration.
I am a definite mix of, you know, white, indigenous, and African. And so, you know, and my kids are definitely African, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I've never, ever heard any racist anything come out of Phil Bear's mouth. Not to mention that, but just in regular, in the 7 years that I've known him, you know, I've seen him play basketball with the youth in the neighborhood before the city council brought in the trailers and took over the basketball court. And I've never, ever, you know, it's just a ridiculous statement. It was a ridiculous try. And what I don't understand is why Mr. Bear nor Mr. Martinez have, you know, basically sued the city or these council members for slander. Because it's that serious.
That they're more concerned with the Beach Flats issue, and that going into an issue of suing around this would detract from the energy and time they have to put into the Beach Flats cases. The Beach Flats... The Planning Commission meeting is coming up, what, in a week or so, and it's serious decisions are going to be made very quickly.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, too. If you want, I can hold on to that for a sec. Is that okay?
Sure.
That's the issue, too. I mean, we were both at the City Council meeting, and you spoke very eloquently on your issue at the City Council meeting, and 98%, I think you and one other person, spoke on a different subject other than...
Beach Flats was the big issue,
yeah,
no question.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that the city council meetings are ineffective. I do not feel as if I'm being heard there. I don't feel as if there's an opportunity to voice. And when asinine statements are being made by city council members that you can, I mean, in black and white, you can prove, you know, that they're wrong, you can't say anything. You stand up to say something, and it's sit down. Your moment, your 3 minutes have been up. You know, there's no more feedback.
We call that Rotkin's Law.
Rotkin
gets to talk all he wants. Riot Act Rotkin, as I've termed him on occasion.
And the one council issue, Rotkin actually, was it Rotkin? I believe it was, who said this. I could be wrong, or maybe it was Hernandez. But one of the council members stated that the parking lot, that actually is public land, and it's proven, you know, in the books here in the state of California, that where the Boardwalk parking lot is actually public lands because it's high tide land. Unfortunately, though, the Boardwalk somehow got hold of it, and they were never supposed to. It was never to be sold. But Rockin was talking about that parking lot. He's like, I don't see what the hoopla is. I don't understand what the big deal is. It's not as if, you know, it's a natural area. It's a damn parking lot, you know, and it's not as if, you know, it's a waterway, what have you. And it's, Rockin, it is a waterway. You guys shoved the waterway over. That has nothing to do with the reality of the fact that, in fact, it is part of the Riverwalk and it is part of the estuary. And yes, you did lay cement, you know, on a wetland area. So because you guys did that, it's not my fault. It's still public land. It still belongs to the people. And we want it back. But that statement just outraged me, you know. And there was nothing I could say about it. You know, I couldn't, you know, stand up and tell him that he was wrong or anything, because there's no room to speak. And so it's pretty ineffective the way the city council is dealing with it. And it's all moving way, way too quickly.
Definitely.
And so as much as people can to open up the communication lines, to get more letters into newspapers, to even maybe have a forum outside of City Hall where people can honestly start discussing this issue, and not only discussion, but taking action, because decisions are going to be made that are going to reshape Santa Cruz completely, and unless we stand up and start speaking on the issue, we are going to be cut completely out of the picture. And
yeah, you know, an issue that's interested me around this whole thing has been the question of housing, since I'm concerned a lot about homeless people's rights. It's interesting to me also to follow what's going on in the Beach Flats around housing. Do you have any sense of what what's happening there. There's talk about building a Bahia hotel complex. How many people are actually losing or will have lost their housing because of this development, as far as you know?
Well, I just so happened to have some stats with me.
Pulling out my little black book.
That's right. And I got this information, actually. Jane Baer did a walkthrough of the neighborhood, and it's open to the public. If you'd like to schedule an appointment on Sunday at 12:45 to take a walk through the Beach Flats community to find out exactly which houses, like for instance, 214 K Street was built in 1907, gone completely. 43rd Street realignment. The Lindemann housing, which is one of the original families that was here, founding Santa Cruz. They have their property. It's right next to like the soccer field where everybody plays soccer at. When the cars aren't parked on the only big grass field that neighborhood has, the house, a really beautiful house that's there, is going to be pulled down as well. And that's also at 165 3rd Street, built in 1923. 161 is the Lindemann residence, and that was built in the 1920s. But from what I understand, Boardwalk has 23 homes. And of course, they'll demolish it, for the expansion of their boardwalk.
Does that mean only 23 people will lose their housing, or I thought it was a significantly larger number?
Well, this is break this down a little bit. And again, you need to really look into it and research the facts. And there's folks who do know, like the back of their hand, the whole entire breakdown. But the boardwalk has 22 or 23 homes. With those 23 homes, they can do whatever they want because it's theirs. But then you figure that these are probably family units, so you figure maybe two persons at least to every home, 22 homes. You're dealing with about maybe 50 or 60 folks right there. Then there are 67 homes that are lined up, I believe, to go after that. Okay, so mostly these folks are families, a lot of homeowners, a lot of renters. It's a really unique area in that there's hotels, there's businesses, there's a boardwalk, which is a huge conglomerate, there's homeowners, there's leasers, there's everything under the sun in this very tiny amount of space. And from what I understand, we want to realign 3rd Street to about where K is, if you're familiar with the neighborhood, so they could swing Ocean Street over the river and into the boardwalk.
You mentioned you have some kind of plan to deal with that, again, redevelopment nightmare plan.
Well, I definitely believe that Santa Cruz needs to deal with its neighborhoods and its occupants first, above and beyond any type of tourist playground situation. And the one thing is the traffic issue. And I live on Lower Ocean Street, and definitely I would like to see my street, my one block in all of Santa Cruz streets, closed off for only residential bike and foot traffic only, which means putting a bike and a footbridge across Ocean Street. So then you have no need to realign 3rd Street, and it slows things down. Also, the parking lot was turned back to the public, to the people. You got no reason to build your roller coaster there because it never belonged to you to begin with. And also, all the millions of dollars generated for parking there on public land for X amount of years, however many years, it's okay, we'll just take 1%, which would be a few million dollars anyhow. That's my little hope and dream, right? And the reality is that they are going to do something to that area regardless,
I've seen a lot of activists showing up at city council, and I mentioned earlier we have folks running for city council, and in a future interview I'm going to ask you to talk about Pat Clark, who I think you've been doing some work with.
Pat's a great guy,
around the NAACP. We haven't got time to do that tonight, but I definitely want you to return and talk about that. But is there a lot of support in your neighborhood, in your block, let's say, to really, let's say, close off the street, make it only pedestrians, bicycles only, or local traffic only? I mean, could you conceivably actually do a citizen revolt, where you actually put up barricades and did it yourself?
On my one block on Ocean Street, I could guarantee at least a 98% signature on the situation.
What about action? What people are willing to risk their butts to do something?
Well, personally, I don't think there's like two ways of doing things. There's like hope and there's fear. And in the way of hope, the city has a chance to redeem itself in a lot of ways by allowing us to not only close off our street, but also build the structures to close off our streets, hire youth, get involved in the public works department, create liaisons, create mentorships, create scholarships, create a $15 minimum wage. By basically, we'll throw our bid to the city to put in the stop signs, the appropriate stop signs, the appropriate speed limit signs.
What group are we talking about?
Our being the folks on my street.
You have a name and organization? You have a group?
Yeah, we will.
And is there a number people can call to support
you? Sure. You can call the voicemail for We Will, which is 429-7419.
Say it again.
429-7419.
And the name of the group again is?
We Will.
We Will.
As in, we will do it ourselves. We will anything, which I kind of like the name a lot because you can throw anything on it. But my main focus and goal with the organization is pretty much our youth and creating just number one, also with our neighborhood. We don't have park space. There are no parks in my neighborhood. And the city, does not even give a shit. But we have a beautiful marsh back there, and we can preserve the marsh and keep it as an educational field for our children. We should have the world's best oceanographers. The kids should be able to have the ability to not only further their education, but further it wherever they choose to. And that's what we want to find out, is what our kids really want to do, and hook them up with mentorships, scholarships, and what have you. There's a lot of talent in our community, and if we don't, start giving a shit about our youth, it's a wasted cause.
So again, the number for people to call We Will is?
The number is 429, it's new to me, 7419.
429-7419.
Yeah.
And if you have any questions for Lisa, I guess you can put them on that line, or you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We are approaching the end of our two-hour show. We will return at 11 o'clock on Sunday, and hopefully we can persuade you, Lisa, to come back then.
I'd love to.
Yeah, or another time.
I'll definitely within the next week or so. I'd love to. And I definitely appreciate the time here, Robert.
Hey, we appreciate your coming, and we appreciate what you're doing for the community. Bathrobes Piers Broadsides will return on Sunday at 11, and if you have anything you want broadcast on the air before that time,
don't hanker for bouquets and veils. They soon turn to cabbage and nappies in pails. The joys and the sorrows of conjugal life, all these can be yours without being a wife. Yes, a good life can come to fruition. You don't need a license to give you permission. You don't have to marry. You never get completely free choice anyhow. Too many people you can't marry for a start, like Paul Newman. A man decides to live in sin, no one's gonna go blaming him. He's the boy, got his need, he won't be a man till he's done the deed. A good girl ought to live alone until she's wed and in her home. Not supposed to cut no capers till she's got her bit of paper on. Now, there are places in this world where they tell the young men and young girls, before you hit your marriage bed, indulge yourselves. Go ahead. Eliminate the cruder forms of sex impulse from your matrimonial selection. But civilized folks, despite our climates, fancy we're above those primates, scorning prenuptial intercourse, we favor marriage, then divorce. The single mother and her children are a legally incomplete unit, unclaimed assets. Marry for safety, marry for gain, marry to give the little bugger a name. Marry by custom or marry by chance, but don't kid yourself, what we call romance ends at the altar. Marriage is a legal contract. Yeah, that's what I said, a legal contract. Two equals getting married, and then, hey presto, they're unequal.
Keep that dial where it is.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. Rosenberg, Sage, Bob, Sugar Ray, Van Moon, the king and I and the catcher in the rye. Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen. Marciano Liberace, satire, goodbye.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, no we didn't light it, but the tide will light it.
Joseph Stalin, Alan Carr, Nasser and Prokofiev, Rockefeller, Campanella, communist bloc. Roy Kahn, one for all, Toscanini, Dacron, Din Din, Foo Falls, rock around the clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Peyton Grace, trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, but we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it.
Well, this morning we have with us Phil Baer, a community activist and landlord from Beach Flats. Recently, the target of an attack from Michael Hernandez and Scott Kennedy around alleged racism. Some of you may have read about it in the Metro Santa Cruz. Hi, Phil.
Hey, hi, Robert.
But the more important aspect of all this, we read, you may know, because I think you listened to our last week's show, or yeah, I guess it was Thursday's show, we read the letters in the Metro, and actually the letter from the man, Mr. Martinez, who sent in, who had actually had the conversation with either Kennedy or Hernandez.
Kennedy.
And this is something that happened, what, over a year ago, right?
Yes.
And suddenly Kennedy and Hernandez decide that you're a racist that needs to be reported to the district attorney, eh?
Yes.
What do you make of all this, Phil, and where is it leading? Are there any ramifications, any new developments?
Yes, the wheels are definitely rolling much faster than many of us would prefer. The final EIR on the beach area south of Laurel plan was released on Monday. The final planning commission hearings on the EIR are scheduled for the 4th and 6th, a couple of days from now.
Where are those hearings and what time for those who want to attend?
Let's see. I believe that's Loudon Nelson at 7, though I'm not absolutely sure on that.
So the 4th will be Tuesday at 7 and the 6th will be Thursday at 7?
That's my understanding.
Uh-huh.
I could be wrong, but I'm fairly sure on that. The information should be available for those who would be inclined to attend, and I would urge the public to attend. The Planning Commission has really been treated like insignificant body in this matter, and I'm hoping they'll recognize that and rise to the occasion.
Now, for those who are mystified by what the Beach Flats plan has to do with accusations of racism from Hernandez and Kennedy, you were accused of racism allegedly for, well, they claimed you had got together a meeting or been spoken at a meeting of landlords to discriminate against tenants who are Latino, whereas Martinez clarified that what he was talking about, which I assume is the only source of information Kennedy has, or he hasn't mentioned any other, was a meeting about drug dealers.
That's essentially true. Emilio, by the way, didn't even speak to the idea at all, and with regard to any conceivable allegation of discrimination against Latinos is totally innocent. I think all of his renters are Latinos, and
to
my knowledge, none of them are drug dealers, and he never had any part of any discussion whatsoever, and in fact, the whole discussion was presented by one other landlord who is himself Latino, and nobody else thought much of the idea whatsoever, and the idea right from the beginning very clearly was to try to reduce the amount of drug trafficking that was going on, and had absolutely nothing to do with ethnicity. The word Mexican or any allusion to Mexican at all was never made.
In other words, we're talking about a list of drug dealers that people might not rent to, and that idea was eventually abandoned anyway, right?
Yes, the idea was that these three other property owners don't live down here like I do, and therefore don't know the local dealers that well, so that some of the dealers were going, in essence, from one of them to the next one of them. And the idea was that if we exchanged the names of those people whom we had to evict because they were dealing drugs, then the next property owner might not make the same mistake and rent to them again, and we might succeed in slowly urging them out of the scene.
Now,
it
you know,
nothing to do with ethnicity.
You know, Phil, we talked about drug dealing and how that for years you and others in the Beach Flats have been concerned that the city council and the police department had kind of done very little about the hard drug dealing down there. And then suddenly a couple of years ago, the increased police presence essentially drove much of the traffic away. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's true. For 15 years, the Beach Flats was controlled, virtually oppressed and ruled by a street gang of very violent people who made a living selling mostly heroin. And we complained repeatedly to the city council about this matter because of its tragic consequences. Numerous dozens, if not hundreds, of overdoses in that time period due to drugs sold off the street in the Beach Flats. Numerous ugly ramifications. We complained, spoke to that specific issue, never referring to the ethnicity of the buyers or the sellers, all of which was pretty much known, but so that no one really had to speak to it. But what we spoke to was heroin dealing and gang violence, whomever does it, of whatever ethnicity.
Now, when did that change, Phil? About what year?
About 95, 96.
So this actually changed before your meeting with Martinez and the famous meeting that Kennedy claimed was about discrimination?
Changed in terms of degree. It would not be truthful to say that the problem has been totally eliminated. It always lurks there as a latent potentiality. And in fact, this summer it has kicked back up rather frighteningly. with all the old symptoms of the gang violence and the random brutal beatings and the stoning of vehicles along 3rd Street who they deem to either be on another gang or have burned them in some sort of a deal, big bricks thrown at cars screaming by to get past the neighborhood. If the brick goes through the window and knocks out the driver, the vehicle is out of control and any pedestrian or other vehicle is
how many times has this happened?
Oh, you can count on it happening at least once or twice per weekend during the summer.
So you say it's happened at least 10 or 15 times?
Oh, Lord, that would be way underestimation. I've watched it on at least 50 occasions.
Wow.
Big bricks. They can take a car out.
Now, is this with 50 occasions this summer or 50 occasions in the last few years?
Oh, in the this summer, I guess I've seen it about 10 times.
Now we talked about this gang of violent thugs that apparently is at least less active than it was several years ago. What about the violent thugs who are attempting to tear apart the beach area with bulldozers and do so to the detriment of those who have low-income housing there? And who are essentially concerned with, well, they're the redevelopment crew that's backed by the gang
yes.
and the council.
By the way, not unrelated to the crime, I am personally of the opinion that the crime was tolerated consciously or unconsciously, partially at least, because a determination of blight is a precondition for the establishment of a redevelopment agency. And this kind of blight was, in that sense, somewhat engineered, caused, and tolerated because it served the purpose of the redevelopment agency, which is, of course, the lead agency for the entire beach area, south of Laurel Comprehensive Plan, which, in fact, is nothing more than a straight collusion between the Seaside Company, the Boardwalk, and the redevelopment agency for the purpose of expanding the amusement park and his other 3,000 pages of documentation and $2 million or so of taxpayer money that has already gone into this plan is a bunch of decorative fluff designed to distract from the essential question, which is whether or not the boardwalk should be allowed to expand. We can't even ask the basic question. That's how smoothly this thing has been hidden.
Now, in fact, this whole business of discrimination, this cry that you've been discriminating, has been, many of us feel, and this has been supported by letters in the Metro, a way of diverting attention from the issues that you have raised repeatedly in public forums and in letters to the media about the wisdom of this Beach Flats 3rd Street realignment La Bahia project.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody knows that that I am not a racist. I've always been fond of other cultures, at least in sort of a intellectual sense. And I've lived for 2 years in Mexico, you know, amongst the very poorest of the poor. It just in total poverty, and I just have a certain empathy for them. Were it not so, I wouldn't have chosen to live for 20 years in the beach flat.
Well, let's turn now.
Have this accusation tossed at me from white middle-class turkeys who live on King Street in upper-middle-class neighborhoods. It is just disgustingly ironic, and I hope the people out there in Radio Land see through it.
Rather than pursue this, what I regard as diversory accusation further, let's return to the real issue, which is the beach flats. And indeed, there was a long queue of speakers at the city council on Tuesday night, the last city council of the summer, and almost everybody spoke about the beach flats. There were some particular, all of them, of course, were opponents of the program. In fact, I have never heard a proponent of the beach flats.
Neither have I.
Speaking at the oral communications period, now maybe they would be speaking at other periods that I'm not aware of.
Well, and if they were, they were either directly hired by the Seaside Company or directly hired by the city. No neutral person has ever spoken on behalf of expanding the amusement park rides. You know, the 90% of the significant number of people who have gone to the trouble of going to the planning commission, the zoning, etc., the city council, to speak to that plan. At least 90% have risen in opposition to it, and we're talking about a lot of people.
Now, on Tuesday, there were a number of new points that were made. One was by activist Jane Baer, your partner.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
And she pointed out that she'd done some calculations on her calculator. Can you kind of recapitulate what you found out?
Oh, yes. That was just one of literally dozens of flagrant mathematical inaccuracies involved in EIR. That one having to do with the means that they use to estimate the number of additional vehicle trips that would be generated by the proposed amusement park expansion.
Now, the EIR, of course, is the crucial document that the environmental impact report, which they're using to show, it is the argument is essentially, this isn't going to have a bad effect on the environment. Right?
Exactly.
Go ahead.
And in this particular one, having to do with traffic calculations, traffic being one of the, I think, 14 areas of designated potential negative environmental impact. On the traffic thing, when they got around to trying to determine the number of cars that would be on the road because of the proposed amusement park expansion, they used a rather logical formula of defining the numbers that are now generated by the boardwalk and the size of the boardwalk as it now exists compared to the size of the proposed expansion, and extrapolate to get a number that they would be a reasonable estimate of how many more cars this proposed expansion would generate.
And Jane found that those figures were significantly in error, right?
Yes. Basically, the existing boardwalk involves 170,000 square feet of amusement park, and the proposed amusement park expansion is 4 acres, but they calculated 4 acres to be 100,000 square feet, as if 1 acre equaled 25,000 square feet, when in fact 1 acre equals 43,000 square feet, so that 4 acres equals 173,000, not 100,000. In other words, they're more than doubling the size.